Our guest for this segment is Dennis Maxwell, who's the author of a book called The Great Eclipse, about the aircraft and the companies that bear the Eclipse name. I mentioned earlier today, Dennis, that the first day that I worked with EA Radio in 2008 at AirVenture was the day that Vern Rayburn resigned, or left, rather.
Yeah, left is good.
Yeah, yeah. And so to see what's happened with the company is really pretty exciting. You've written a chronicle of that, the rise and fall and rise again.
Right. That's basically what it's about. It's, you know, talks about the dream of that Vern had to take a couple of big technological steps in advanced aircraft, from stir welding, advanced avionics, and as he was looking at the plane, at what he wanted in the plane back in the late 90s, he was really looking at where we are today with glass in the cockpits and the types of activities that avionics can do now that they weren't able to do back in those days. And he thought that he could come up with a manufacturing method called friction stir welding that would speed up manufacture tremendously. And he also had a couple of other ideas about airframe design and simplicity and high reliability in a small aircraft. And most of all, he believed that the market was ready for twin jet aircraft, a low-cost vehicle that people could buy that didn't have to be bought by large corporations. And he and Williams International, Sam Williams, put the thing together back in the late 90s. We introduced it, and I started working with him on a contract basis. They hired us to, our company was a big marketing organization in Silicon Valley, and so I started working with Vern in 99 and stayed pretty much with the company all the way through, except not as a part of the company. And as it moved along, things started to work as stir welding was proven, and as the avionics got defined clearly and they set prices and things like that, Vern and I decided to it would be okay for me to write a book. And so I kind of labored along as the company labored along and rose up and through its fall. During that time, I retired from Silicon Valley and moved to Charleston, South Carolina. And oddly enough, the guy that brought Eclipse out of the bankruptcy doldrums and went into Chapter 7 bankruptcy is a guy by the name of Mason Holland, and he lives in Charleston, South Carolina. So through sheer social happenstance, I reconnected with the company, and Mason helped me look at what was going on as the company moved from bankruptcy back into being a living corporate entity. And now it's got a minority investment from Sikorsky. It's fixed all of the problems that hadn't been fixed with the original aircraft as times got tough for it. And it's looking at restarting production. Not going to say exactly when, and I certainly can't say when, but since I'm just an author writing about it. But I think they expect to start restart production with the aircraft. And right now they've refurbished all of the aircraft that had been some aircraft for Dayjet and Air Taxi Company have been repossessed, and they've fixed those up and brought them up to the standards that they wanted with the avionics, and all of the rest of the mechanical problems and design issues have been pretty much resolved. So it's kind of a failure, you know, a success story with a failure story with what looks like another real success at the end of it.
So you're obviously close to the information, the subject matter, just having written the book, obviously, but what, in your opinion, was probably the major misstep that led to the problems at Eclipse?
The failure of the Williams engine. The original Williams engine was derived from, though not directly, the 107 Tomahawk engine, the cruise missile engine, which works really well. Problem is, it only has to work once, and with an aircraft, you'd like to have them continue to work.
Yeah, valid point.
One of the problems with the Williams engine, they took off with on its first flight with the two Williams engines. They were supposed to develop 770 pounds of thrust each, and they developed 350. So it was like taking off with one engine. Flew the aircraft, went through its paces on the initial flight, landed safely. They were never able to get two engines working again. Major problems in starts, fires, all kinds of issues. Williams' manufacturing facility is located up in Michigan, and they pretty much had a plane going back and forth every day with an engine. Very nice and small, so you could put it in a FedEx package, but nonetheless, they couldn't get them to work. And they brought in an engine expert from MIT to look at it, and he eventually said, it's kind of like the engine in a Ferrari. If you buy one, get a mechanic to go with it, because it's going to require a mountain of maintenance. And one of Rayburn's precepts, one of the big things about his vision was he wanted to have an airplane that would be in the high 90s from a reliability standpoint, and that didn't have downtime, and that didn't have, you know, mechanical outages of any sort. The engine obviously was going to make that. But by that time, he'd amassed a huge number of orders. You know, on opening day, when they started taking orders, they took them down, and they were going to take them at Vern's home base, which was the Scottsdale, Arizona airport. They decided, because they got so many calls about coming in and buying the airplane, that they moved it to the Phoenix Hilton. And 2 days before the event, the Phoenix Hilton called them and said, "You guys aren't on until Friday morning. What are you doing?" I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, we have people lined up from the conference room out the door and down the steps like it was a rock concert." And these weren't $5,000 deposits for an aircraft. You had to come in with big money, over $100K, and it had to be on negotiable instruments to get a position in the aircraft. So it was pretty popular right from the start. The engines failed. They had a lot of orders. And Pratt & Whitney was developing the 600 series. So they developed a smaller unit on the basis of seeing thousands of engines. So far, it's hundreds of engines. But Pratt's still involved, and they're really working. The engine is in fine shape. The aircraft is now cleared again. It had an ED, but engine is now cleared to 41K, and you know, it burns about 50 to 60 gallons an hour at 375 knots at 41K, which isn't bad. You know, it's a fairly efficient aircraft. And the aircraft that there are a couple of charter organizations, and they're running in the high 90s on reliability, on availability. So it is a really solid aircraft. And built 260, they lost one in Indiana back in 2007. You know, bad landing by the pilot, and all the rest of the aircraft are flying. Hasn't had a major incident other than that. So it's got a pretty good safety record, and it's got a good reliability record. It's cheap. It's super efficient from the standpoint. It's way above stage 4 noise levels, the engines, and it's the most efficient from an environmental standpoint of any jet engine. So the engine's in good shape. Stir welding works. The aircraft is, you talk to the pilots, they call it a joy to fly, one of the best they've ever flown. So it's a pretty successful fulfillment of Vern's vision. The business issues were different.
That was going to be my next question, actually, is do you think it's, the aircraft as it now stands, do you think it's really lived up to what Vern had originally hoped for?
Yeah, I think today,
particularly in the engines.
Today it's in the high 90s as being complete. It doesn't have auto throttle on it yet. All the mechanics are there, but the software isn't. That'll be up soon. And then that's the complete package that Vern envisioned back in the beginning, which isn't bad from a fulfillment standpoint when you think about it. Figuring that you've gone through a major economic recession that pretty much stopped purchases and stopped the funding that was necessary to continue the company. And Mason Holland, who's the CEO of Eclipse Aerospace, the company that resulted from the bankruptcy, he's got a solid organization, really sharp people, and it's a very sensible business strategy. You know, Vern was saying there'd be 1,500 sales a year, and Mason's view is that's not the way the market is going to operate, and he's planning on a company that can produce the aircraft that meets the market and meets all of the market's needs from the standpoint of operations.
Do you have a sense of how many are for sale right now?
No, I don't. I know that Mason took over the Dayjet aircraft. There were 28 of those, and has refurbished them and sold most of them, but I don't know the exact numbers. You'd have to talk to Eclipse Aerospace. As I said, I'm the author, not the spokesman for the company.
Well, as author, I was going to ask you, you laid out how you started to write the book. Was there a point where you decided there wasn't going to be a book in this?
Well, when I was writing the book, a friend of mine who's a Wall Street author said, "Hey, you should go to this agent in New York," because I'd never done a book before. I've done lots of things for, you know, papers for HBR and lots of papers and congressional testimony and things like that, but not a formal book. And I got this agent, and she had a bidding war going on for the book. And they were going to, four companies were bidding for the book, and they were going to hold the auction for it the week before Thanksgiving in 2002, which was the week Eclipse announced that they didn't have an engine. So I thought at that point the book was pretty much over. But then they kept me involved, and it looked like it would be a good business case study. So the book is, I think, got a lot of human interest and some neat stories, but it also has at the back, I've put at the back end of it a whole bunch of business-oriented questions. Why did you, what would you have done in this case? Were three technology innovations too many at one time? That sort of thing.
And why this book? Why this subject matter? What sent you down this road?
Well, I was involved with them from the beginning. It is a really cool aircraft.
Agreed.
Vern is a cool personality. A lot of the other people involved in this thing, right up to Mason, are really interesting people to write about. And it looked to me at the beginning it would be a really terrific success story. And then it turns out that it really is a pretty good success story.
Just not the ending that you would have necessarily written.
No, you know, ideally, if you followed Vern's vision, you should have seen 1,500 aircraft coming out of the shops in Albuquerque every year. I don't think that's ever going to happen, but it is a lovely aircraft.
So the book, The Great Eclipse, is available at the Eclipse booth on the flight line. Also available.
I'll even sign it for you.
At the EA warehouse.
I think it's at the EA warehouse. I'm not sure about that.
Maybe. Okay.
Maybe.
All right.
I haven't been over there. I've been signing books, actually.
Okay, and you've been signing them from there or at the Eclipse booth?
At the Eclipse activity. Okay. Not an unauthorized signing activity. Couldn't get into that.
Okay,
too late.
Just a little north of the Brown Arch, not far from here.
Right, exactly.
And available online anywhere?
Online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the sites.
Very good.
Generally available online.
Dennis Maxwell, thanks for coming by today.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
Having me aboard.